I'm Jalal from the Victory Bus Project. You're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Arthur and Karen in Hoover, Alabama. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
The Public News Service DOA Newscast, July the 2nd, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. Former President Donald Trump has taken credit for placing three conservative justices on the U.S. Supreme Court. On Monday, the court awarded him a major win by giving him immunity from criminal prosecution for what are known as official acts taken while in office.
New data show that a majority of voters in Arizona and around the country are paying attention and understand the impact the next president could have on the future of the U.S. Supreme Court. Sarah Harris with Stand Up America says whomever wins the election in November could select and appoint up to four new justices, reshaping the legal precedent in the U.S. for years to come.
It's important to think about generations after us because many of the people who could potentially be put on the bench will be on there for 50 to 60 years, potentially, as justices continue to be appointed younger and younger.
Harris adds that four of the current justices on the bench will be in their 70s in 2025 when the next president takes office. I'm Alex Gonzalez reporting.
Supreme Court reform initiatives have faced pushback from Republicans who argue it would jeopardize the separation of powers between Congress and the court. And President Joe Biden Monday ripped the Supreme Court decision on immunity, which ruled the presidents have an absolute immunity from prosecution for core official acts. And he issued a stern warning for a possible second term for Donald Trump. That from CNN. They quote Biden as saying, "There are no kings in America. Each of us is equal before the law. No one is above the law, not even the President of the United States." CNN notes he went on to say with today's Supreme Court decision on presidential immunity that fundamentally changed for all practical purposes, there are virtually no limits on what the president can do. It's a fundamentally new principle and it's dangerous precedent. And with school cafeterias closed for the summer, community groups and nonprofits are working to ensure that Colorado's 1 in 5 kids who go without food because their family can't afford groceries can still access nutritious meals.
Kristen Collins with Colorado Food Cluster says because rural families have longer distances to travel for in-person summer meal sites, her group is now delivering boxes of food directly to homes.
And the box includes 7 days worth of breakfast and 7 days worth of lunch. All of those meals are shelf-stable, so you'll get tuna packets, chicken salad packets, goldfish, juices.
Collins says she expects to serve meals to 1,800 low-income kids across 20 rural counties this year. Last year, Congress exempted rural areas from rules that require summer meals to be eaten at a specific site, and there are now to-go options available outside metro areas as well. I'm Eric Galatas.
This is Public News Service. Next to Indiana, where a new report gives high marks for its rollout of a 988 mental health hotline. But our Joey Lurie reports it also highlights that all states need to do more to support and reach people in every community.
The research by the nonprofit Inseparable evaluates state progress in implementing the National 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline and shows Indiana continues to lead the nation in crisis response. Indiana Family and Social Services Administration Secretary Dan Reseniak says most Hoosiers who reach out for help are finding it.
Since we launched 988 last July, we have seen tremendous benefits already. Indiana routinely is in the top 5 states for our in-state answer rate for 988, and we have been over 90%.
988 launched nationwide in 2022 and sunsetted the Be Well Crisis Helpline, or 211. While 10 states have implemented cell phone surcharges to fund the helpline, Indiana has not, relying instead on a combination of federal and state funds.
If you are in a crisis or know someone who is, call or text the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. And as summer kicks into full gear, North Carolina dentists stress the importance of maintaining kids' dental health.
Dr. Miranda Kolaski with the North Carolina Dental Society says with more outdoor activities and changing routines, dental care can often be neglected, leading to cavities and dental trauma. Her advice is that parents keep up with preventative care and encourage healthier eating habits.
Try to pick a healthy summer snack. That can be fruit, that can be vegetables, just not something dried, not something processed. And the more processed you have, the more dried it is, the more likely it is to stick their teeth.
She says it's that left behind food that can cause cavities. Shantia Hudson reporting.
Experts say kids should be seen by a dentist when they get their first tooth and then every 6 months after that. Finally, Mike Mohan lets us know new polling shows that most Americans still favor non-fossil fuel energy sources, but support for certain renewables is not quite as strong these days.
The Pew Research Center is out with a new public opinion report on energy choices. 63% of those surveyed support the U.S. taking steps to become carbon neutral by 2050. But support for expanding wind and solar development has gone down from well past 80% to around 75%. Dr. Kieran Gallagher of the group Clean Wisconsin feels it's important to remind residents that climate change is happening at their doorstep.
We can point to the drought that affected our farmers last summer, and then in stark comparison, the intense rain and flooding events we've been experiencing this spring and summer.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service. Remember, and listen, supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations, your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, July 2nd. Local early morning temperatures range from 47 degrees in Steventown to 54 in Skodak. Air quality will be good and the weather is going to be great. A cool morning gives way to a warm afternoon. High of 82 lingers for a couple hours, but it shouldn't be a bother as dew points will be in the 50s. Some puffy little clouds show up in the afternoon. After dark, temperatures gently fall, reaching 59 degrees by sunup on Wednesday. A little cloudier, a little windier, tomorrow we'll have a high of 83 at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 65 degrees. Then, Independence Day is looking to have a threat of rain in the afternoon, a high of 86. Might be a good idea to plan some shelter for any social gatherings. 66 degrees overnight takes us into a similar Friday, potentially stormy afternoon with a high of 88. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12:15 a.m., low tide at 7:14 a.m., high tide again at 12:44 p.m., then low tide once again at 7:12 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 65 degrees and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:21 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:21 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be average at 412 kilometers per second, with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 5 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 192. and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Survive All, one of the nation's leading manufacturers of fallout shelters, now combines sturdy steel with durable concrete block for
a civil defense approved basement type do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Ensure protection for your family. See a Survive All shelter today.
The Upper Hudson Valley has a lot to offer in the way of the arts. PS21 is a center for contemporary performance in Chatham, inviting talent from around the world to perform in their open-air pavilion, black box theater, and across their grounds. To learn more about the talent coming to their program, I'm now joined by PS21's executive and artistic director, Elena Sianko. Welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thanks, Sina. Great to be here. Great to see you.
So many listeners may not have been to PS21. What would you like, what is important to understand about this performance space?
Well, first of all, it's a wonderful, fairly new, fantastic state-of-the-art theater, 100 acres of meadows and orchards. We present a roster of international work. We concurrently and in parallel present a series of programming called Pathways for different communities in Columbia County and beyond, where Pathways, it's also a platform for us to collaborate with about 27 local and regional organizations with whom we developed partnership relationships to co-program, co-create, and also host productions and events and masterclasses, not just in our space, but throughout the entire county.
So it's not just performances on stage, but you're bringing the arts off of the stage in collaboration to make it a little bit more accessible for folks?
Yes, it's we collaborate to present pathways in the parking lots, in libraries. We present street arts where communities are. We present in town parks. Basically, to really stress the importance of our audiences and prospective audiences who live here year-round. Just a week ago for Juneteenth, we collaborated with Who We Be and Tanya Jackson to bring the legendary Ingramettes, the first family of gospel from Richmond, Virginia, who spent an afternoon and morning at the Shiloh Baptist Church in Hudson. It was really an experience for our community members who are in Hudson. And then PS21 provided transportation for our Hudson-based community organization partners, as well as the Shiloh Church community, to come and see the legendary Ingramettes in concert in the evening on the stage at PS21. And this was free of charge for our communities and very modestly priced for the rest of the audience. General ticket prices.
You've quite a few things, including Pathways, coming up in your season. We won't be able to give each one a lot of attention, but first let's start with a general overview. What are some of the things that are presenting here? And then we'll dive into a couple more specifics.
We mostly each season present new adventurous productions by leading and emerging American and international artists so that we could showcase in this area what's new, what's thought-provoking, especially in contemporary theater, contemporary performance. We started bringing contemporary circus, Novo Cirque, as early as 2021 and continue to do so, and a number of productions in entirely new genres. We very much focus on the visitor experience, and PS21 is destination, and the experience for a broad range of populations, so that offering very low ticket prices for international new productions, so that those ticket prices won't box anyone out. A lot of the work is complex and challenging, but exciting. It transcends boundaries and revitalizes many known artistic conventions. But we hope that with all of the new offerings, we leave our audiences recharged and invigorated, and maybe even thinking differently. So if you're asking me for a couple of highlights, it's definitely, one is called Katarina and the Beauty of Killing Fascists by Tiago Rodriguez, an important European playwright and director who is currently director of Festival d'Avignon. It's a very large, important European theater festival in the south of France. This production, Katarina, toured in Europe very successfully, and in November it's going to go to Brooklyn Academy of Music, but PS21 is presenting its premiere on July 5 and July 6. And the second really important piece is Hamlet by Teatro La Plaza from Peru, by another wonderful contemporary playwright and director, Cella Di Ferrari. And this piece is also going to be presented in the United States next year with different, much larger presenters, and we are giving it the New York premiere.
So you mentioned Katrina and the Beauty of Killing Fascists, commemorating the 1954 murder of activist Katrina Eufemia. It asks these complex questions about what is justice? Does violence have a place in justice? Looking at protests and, of course, fascism. How does this play navigate those complex questions?
Well, first of all, it's important to go back to what you mentioned about the Salazar dictatorship and so-called Carnation Revolution, which we are celebrating this year in 2024, the 50th anniversary of the end of a fascist regime in one country in Europe, in specifically Portugal in 1974, and also the celebrating the end of European colonialism in Africa. But what's interesting is that half a century on now, what remains of those utopias, right, of democratic change? I mean, look at what we are living through right now in this country, but also the spread of populism and dictatorship in even countries like Europe, which in many places where we thought that those regimes were done with. When we are thinking about presenting Katarina, what future those utopias have in our age of racist and global shift to the right? And also, if you look at even Europe's deliberate self-isolation from the migration flows. So I think that's probably just a preface of maybe the timeliness of this incredible work by Tiago Rodriguez. You know, what's I think challenging for, I think, audiences, for all of us, when you ask me about discussions and how we bring our audience in into this conversation, like in many good and strong works of theater, rather than giving us an answer to these complex questions, he really, in this play, presents the consequences of these questions on stage as a dramatic paradox, quite lucidly. Rather than being happy about celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Portuguese Revolution and the end of fascism, we feel like there is quite a palpable threat that exists across the entire continent and beyond of terrifying possibility of dictatorial regimes returning in strong force.
So Katrina and the Beauty of Killing Fascists takes place Saturday, July 6th at 7 p.m., and the other performance that you mentioned is Hamlet, and it's performed by actors with Down syndrome, but they're not just playing Hamlet, they're interweaving their own deeply personal reflections and asking to be or not to be, and how can we exist in a world that ignores and excludes us. What I like about this is that it's really including the narrative and not just making a bit of an exploitative performance piece. Can you talk a little bit more about what makes this Hamlet unique?
It's not just the fact that the actors have Down syndrome who are all engaged in Hamlet. Yes, there is Shakespeare quotes, but it's really a very free adaptation that also allows the actors to also express their own frustrations, contradictions, because what does for them to be or for us, what does it mean? You know, that question about the finite nature of life or the need to respond to events that we have been asking with Shakespeare since the 17th century. But for everybody, including these actors, how do we and us as all other human beings regard the lives of those with the Down syndrome, and what meaning does the existence have in the world that is so much ruled by efficiency, productivity, you know, impossible models of beauty? And so that's what I think it makes this production absolutely remarkable in its humanism, actually in its incredible strength artistically also.
And that is taking place on July 19th and 20th at 8 p.m. And these are just two pieces that we pulled out from an extraordinary roster that is coming up. Could you tell listeners the best way to follow your work and to learn about the full programs that are taking place at PS21?
Go on the website, ps21chatham.org. And you can also follow us on Instagram, ps21chatham. And this has a lot of information and images as well as reels and kind of previews for the audiences to educate themselves a little bit more about both shows.
Elena Sianko, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining me for Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thanks so much, Simon.
For this next segment, we're joined by Hugh Johnson. Hey, Hugh.
How's it going?
It's going great here. So Hurricane Beryl made landfall in the Caribbean today, and it's a Category 4 hurricane. Is it normal to have a hurricane of such magnitude in July?
No, not at all. In fact, it's not. It was actually a 4 yesterday, which was still June, and that's the first time we've ever recorded a Category 4 in the month of June. So that is pretty unprecedented, and it's not normal at all. Now, this Beryl is still working west, and it's going across the Caribbean. It hit the Windward Islands and Grenada. And unfortunately, we don't know how much damage yet. It's still, you know, it'd probably take a few days before we see, find out how many deaths and damage occurred. But it's not good. In Category 4, it hit on. It had storm surge. It had 4 to 6 inches of rain. It would have had more, but it was moving pretty fast, but very powerful storm. And it did drop down to a Category 3 because the wall went through a restructuring process, and not so much that it hit the island, because the islands are very small. That didn't really affect it. But it's back up to a 4 again. And there's even a chance that it could reach a Category 5 in the next day or so. And if that happens, that'll be the first time we had a Category 5 this early ever in a season. July 16, 2015, Emily was the earliest we ever hit a Category 5. And if you remember, not 2005, that was a very, very wicked year for hurricanes. That was the year of Katrina, of course, and 28 other storms. So that was a very active year. And unfortunately, it's looking like this year could be quite active as well.
Yeah, and Hugh, you mentioned the time, the wall, and you said that it went through a restructuring. Could you explain to our listeners what that is?
All right, well, you know, basically the whole idea of a hurricane is, what makes it powerful is you get all the energy concentrated near that eye wall. The very center of the storm is relatively calm. It can be clear or relatively precipitation-free, but you have the very powerful winds around it. So you get to a point where there's enough friction in the storm that it kind of goes through a reprocessing of its own, where it can split the wall, it can weaken the wall, and it can reform it. And that's what happened. We had a reforming of the eye wall. It's very impressive. The last satellite picture I saw now is very impressive. And it looks like it's strengthening again. But it goes through that restructuring process from time to time, the convection. So that's basically, you know, the eye wall, that's the real damage of the air of a hurricane, is right around that eye wall. That's where you have your highest winds, most intense rain, and that kind of stuff.
While we're on explanations, you've mentioned Category 4 and Category 5. I know that it's based on wind speed, I think. Can you say,
yes,
just explain briefly the difference?
Yeah, well, but Category 4 is a sustained. Now, we're talking sustained winds of 150 miles an hour. I think a Category 5 is 175. And again, I want to emphasize, we're not talking gusts. We're talking about basically just imagine being in a place where the winds are fairly constantly blowing close to 150 miles an hour. Now, I've been in a small hurricane, not a category two, not a five, and that was rough enough. I mean, that was just the wind's just relentless. So when you get to category four and five, it's catastrophic. It really is.
And in 2017, a hurricane actually hit the Caribbean. It was Hurricane Irma. How does this compare to Hurricane Beryl?
Irma was much more powerful. It was a Cape Verde storm. It came later in the season. It was a Category 5. It was bigger than Beryl. Not that Beryl is done yet. We're not done with that yet. But that was one of the worst hurricanes of all time. So that was worse. So, yeah, it's just unbelievable because, you know, you would expect hurricanes later in the season. This is definitely really early for a hurricane, certainly of this strength. And we haven't even started the Cape Verde season. This was not a Cape Verde hurricane. This developed in the Caribbean pretty close to Aruba. The Cape Verde season really doesn't get going until late July.
I'm still trying to get my head around that idea of 150 to 170 mile an hour wind. Yeah. Have you ever been in the vicinity of such a powerful storm? And if so, what does it feel like?
No, like I said, I was in Jean, Hurricane Jean back in 04 down in Orlando. Our union, the National Weather Service, had a great wisdom to have a convention in September in Orlando, the year that they kept getting hit by hurricanes. And that was bad enough. I mean, that was like awful, just seeing the wind constantly. It felt like when I went outside, it felt like someone was putting a high-pressured hose in my face. It actually hurt to walk. I mean, we weren't really supposed to go outside, but I did for a moment. I just had to experience it. And it chilled my, you know, chilled me to the bone, and it hurt my face. And those were winds that were sustained closer to 100 miles an hour, 75 to 100. So you're adding 50 to that. And I don't ever want to be near that. That would be just awful.
Wow. And Hugh, what kind of factors are considered when predicting a major weather event like a hurricane?
Lennox? You?
Yes, Lennox. I'm still here. Yeah. Oh, I didn't quite understand that question. I'm sorry. I didn't catch it.
Oh, yeah. So like when you're predicting, for example, how strong a hurricane is going to be, what kind of factors usually do meteorologists look at?
Oh, okay. Very good question. Yeah. Well, we look at basically what's going on, not just at the surface, but upstairs. You want to see good divergence aloft, convergence near the surface. Convergence is when the winds come together. They come, you know, they basically come towards the center of something like a low pressure area. And then aloft, we have the air diverging. So the stronger you get divergence aloft, the more convergence at the surface, then you can get this chimney effect of really pumping up the storm. The other thing you look at is how warm the water it's going to traverse. And there's no shortage of that. We've been talking about this. The water in the Atlantic, most of the Atlantic is very warm, way above normal, mid-upper 80s, in some cases 90 degrees. So anything over 80 is fair game for hurricanes. You look at how the winds aloft are going. I mean, you want them light but not zero, and you want a little bit of a, you know, that divergent flow and also a little bit of a push, so it keeps everything kind of rolling along and really just makes it build up. So very good question. You know, again, the computers look at that, the upper air radio sondes look at that, and that kind of, and the forecasters then use their experience to try to figure out where it's going. Fortunately, this Hurricane Beryl does not look like a threat to the United States. What it will do, there was actually, we've already had three disturbances. There was a brief spin-up called Chris that hit down in the Caribbean and slammed into Mexico, bringing rains. But guess what? This Beryl could end up in the same place and bring more rain when it dies out. So there could be a lot of flooding in Mexico, but we're talking in the weekend. So, but it looks like right now this one is safe. It's not going to pound the United States, thank goodness.
I just heard on the TV today that Lake Erie is already at 75 degrees. So I thought that was pretty hot. So you said the Caribbean is even warmer than that.
Oh, much warmer than that. Yeah.
So a lot of this, we've talked in the past about climate change impacting tropical storms. What can we expect in the future?
More storms. I mean, you know, maybe not necessarily more hurricanes, although I think some years we will have more, but they're going to be stronger. Because again, warmer water that allows more fuel for these storms. That's what they feed on, is that warm water. And water temperatures will continue to warm as we continue to put CO2 in the atmosphere, as we continue to warm up the atmosphere, and as a result, the sea temperatures will generally be warmer. Now, it was interesting. I talked about this about a month ago, that the temperatures were actually slightly cooler than normal on the eastern seaboard, but I rechecked that, and that's all changed. We're back to normal, maybe slightly below, but we've warmed it up along the eastern seaboard, so it's not as cool as it was. I know, though, it's still like, I guess down at southern Delaware, the water temperature was 68, which is a little cool for July. Not real cool, but a couple points off, but it's getting closer to normal. So I was hoping we could keep the cooler air along the coast, and that would help weaken storms as it came north if they start to approach that area. But that might be changing, unfortunately. But hopefully there's no threat of anything happening along the eastern seaboard anytime soon. But we are going to have an active season, and the more hurricanes and tropical storms you have, the more likely one of them will sneak up the coast and bother us. That's just, you know, basically law of statistics.
And sticking to the topic of climate change, we've had 8 months in a row of above normal temperature. Is the heat set to let up later in the fall or in the winter?
Well, we are going to La Nina, and of course, we transitioned from an El Nino to La Nina. We're in that process now, and that will allow a little bit of cooling in the northern hemisphere. It should, because now the Pacific is going to be cooler than normal instead of warmer than normal. So I would think that in the next few months, we will see temperatures, and one of those months may actually end up being below normal. I don't think it's going to be during the summer necessarily, but maybe in the fall. Again, that's just speculation, but good question again. And based on La Nina, which unfortunately is going to help increase the threat of hurricanes along the eastern seaboard, because El Nino, you have weaker shear, whereas El Nino, you know, you have too much shear that tears the heads off the storms. La Nina works the opposite, but it will cool things down a little bit in the Atlantic and rather in the Pacific and maybe across the northern hemisphere. So I think we will see a cooler than normal month coming. We know we're really in trouble, but I think there's a pretty good bet we will in the fall.
So the hottest day on record in Albany was set on July 4th, 1911, with a temperature of 104 degrees. If you said it's going to be cooling a bit, we won't be breaking that record this 4th of July, right?
No, we're not even close. So this week looks pretty good. Today, of course, fantastic after a cruddy start. But it looks like tomorrow we'll warm it up a little bit into the 80s and upper 80s on Wednesday. And then a front moves through Wednesday night and some showers and storms. But right now it looks like it will clear much of the area, or most of the area, by 4th of July. But it looks like a pretty nice day. We'll turn a westerly wind and see temperatures well up in the 80s, but lowering humidity, I think. So it will be a much nicer, won't be anywhere near 104. That's true. We will not be anywhere near that. And then it looks like we'll have a warm Friday, and the weekend, unfortunately, right now looks a little unsettled, but it's still a week away. But it looks like a pretty good week coming. At least 4th of July looks decent for the parades and all the outdoor activities. Remember last year, it was funny. Last year, we had that really freak storm in that it dropped south out of Saratoga. It was a near severe thunderstorm. And just as they were getting ready for the fireworks in Albany, they had to cancel. I don't remember, but it was a really muggy day. And it looked like, yeah, we might just make it. And then all of a sudden that storm came down. So hopefully nothing like that this year.
Right. And I mean, you said that we're not going to break the record this year.
No.
And I mean, I was just wondering in terms of like other U.S. adjacent countries like Canada, for example, or the Caribbean, are they having faster increases of their temperatures?
Oh, yeah. Everywhere is. I mean, and oh, by the way, I want to point something interesting out. Remember, I went to Alaska a few weeks ago. I talked about that, I think, last week or the week before show. And I'm glad if we didn't go this week, because Denali State Park, Denali Park up in Alaska is having forest fires. And apparently it's closed. There's a forest fire very close to the entrance. We were there. We actually saw the entrance. And that would not be good. So the air quality in Fairbanks the other day was 323. Now, again, we talked about that a lot last year. Anything under 50, like today, is a good day. Under 50 is great. You breathe great. When you get over 100, it becomes dangerous, especially for unhealthy, for people with sensitive issues. And then when you get to 200, really no one should be outside exerting at all. So, yeah, Fairbanks has been up to 300. So I'm glad we weren't in Fairbanks during that time, or this time, rather.
So I think as soon as you said wildfires, we all thought about what we faced in the past. What are the winds like? Do you think we'll be getting the smoke here again, or is that farther away?
We might. I don't see any immediate threat, but, you know, we'll have to keep an eye on because, you know, that it will come down through the jet stream, a west-northwesterly flow, so that, you know, depending on how extensive these fires get, certainly could have a problem. Hopefully it will be aloft at that point. We've had a couple times already this spring I've seen we've had some smoke aloft, thankfully not near the ground. But I haven't heard of any really bad fires in Canada. We had the ones, of course, in New Mexico and California, but that smoke stayed away from us. But there's still plenty of time for that to change. I wouldn't be surprised if we have a couple of smoke issue days coming up in the next few weeks, but I don't see anything in the next couple of days anyways.
Okay, so what should we be expecting from the weather this week?
Yeah, like I said, a pretty good week. We'll have a nice day tomorrow. Wednesday will be nice, except by late in the day, we might have a thunderstorm as a cold front gets near us, but that will be mainly Wednesday night. And then Thursday, 4th of July, starts out maybe with a shower, but with any luck at all, the rest of the day will be fairly decent. A little bit of a west breeze and temperature as well up in the 80s, but humidity coming down, which will be coming up on Wednesday, getting muggy again Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday, another front through the area. So there could be some showers and storms, hard to time right now, but hopefully not a washout. I don't think it will be, but there will be the threat of showers and thunderstorms at times during the upcoming weekend.
Hugh, it's always great talking with you. We really appreciate you spending part of your Mondays each week when you're in the area with us. Thanks a lot.
All right. Have a great 4th of July, both of you, and enjoy the beautiful night.
Steve!
Happy Independence Day, WGXC listeners. Hey! Woo! Make your voices heard.
Woo-hoo! Mm-hmm.
Thank you for blowing out everybody's speakers, Matthew.
Anytime, Shane Pine.
Yeah. Hi there, Sean Mack.
Hello.
This is the Camp Hill Hudson Radio Group. We're wishing you a happy 4th of July on Independence Day in the USA. And we thought, hey,
Wendy!
4th of July, not always, but usually has big memories of times past. And I wanted to ask you all here, we've got Kelly, Sean Mack, and Matthew and myself, Michael from Campbell Hudson, and we wanted to talk about memories from the 4th of July, past memories. So what was yours? We were talking earlier, Sean. What's one of your big memories from 4th of July?
I would say, like, spending time with family, and when I was probably, like, 8 years old, I saw, like, the fireworks at the Clifton Park Commons, like, ground.
Albany, you mean, or?
Well, both, actually.
Where's the Common Park?
It's in Clifton Park.
Oh, Clifton Park. I misunderstood. Okay. Clifton Park and then also Albany. You would go between the two?
Yeah.
Was it just mostly the fireworks or was the big highlight or, I don't know, the building up to it, waiting for it to get dark?
Yeah, like that too. And
yeah.
Like sometimes just like spending the time with like family and like eating food, like hot dogs, hamburgers.
Eating tons of cotton candy, right? Yeah. Yum, yum, yum.
Unhealthy.
Well, but that's the point though. Pink or purple cotton candy? Did you ever have purple cotton candy, Kelly? Or bright blue. Have you had that?
Yeah, I had the blue.
Bright blue cotton candy. I don't know. I can't remember the last time I had it. I'm sure it's one of the most unhealthy things ever created. But my memory is they had these glow sticks. I'm sure there's different things now. This is in the 80s when I was back in the Midwest. But you would buy these green glow sticks and you would snap it and then it would turn green, but you would wait till it got dark and you'd have it'd have a little string or rope around it so that it could dangle like a necklace. And then you just have this green thing hanging, and then the fireworks would come at whatever 9:07 in the evening. But that's my memory, is just running around with that green glow stick. But what about Matthew? Yeah,
my memory about Happy 4th of July holiday in Brooklyn, New York City, on a rooftop with Andrew, my oldest brother, his girlfriend Lindsay, mom and dad, watching fireworks, watching over on people's heads. We can't see very well, but there's a four skies with four fireworks. There's one fireworks center of the sky, a second fireworks on the right side of the sky, another fireworks on the left side. Is a big rooftop fireworks marathon. Is so freaking good. It sounds like thunderstorms.
And they might have been singing this song?
No.
No. What song were they singing? This was one you requested. Was this the Twilight, the Glass Gleam?
Well,
that's a great story, though.
But I will send you a link, my all-time favorite marching band from Dad, that we will send to you.
Okay.
This is Childish Songs.
The one that you requested is Childish. Okay.
Because you put a bug, by mistake.
Yes. I got a bug bite from Golden Boy.
It's called Blockabur Band.
Thank you. And what about Kelly? 4th of July memories?
This is kind of a funny one. Years ago, we have this tradition where our family used to meet on the beach at Key Biscayne, where we used to have a tan house there, and
Where is this again? In Florida, or
yeah,
okay,
Miami. So what we did every year was we would gather on the beach and watch the fireworks, but
right.
I really cannot stand the fireworks. So when the first big clap of fireworks came on, I got up from the sand, ran across to the gate, flew the gate open, slammed it, and then ran across the driveway that we had there. It was like a small driveway with pools, and so I ran across the driveway and flew our sliding glass door open, and then closed it, and I turned the our TV up to top volume so I wouldn't hear it.
And so the bombs weren't bursting in air for you. No. They were bursting outside, out, away from the air. Yeah.
What'd you think about that?
Even though we're on the air right now.
Oh, yeah. Shoot, sorry.
This is a song that Kelly, you like a lot. The God Bless the USA. Lee Greenwood. Yeah, do you have memories of that song? Is that from childhood or?
Well, no? That's when I usually hear the Greenport, one of the bands at Dusk to Dawn does a version to that song. They did it last week.
Dusk to Dawn. Okay. Is that a local band? No, wait, Dusk to Dawn. I don't know. Would like to hear that. So very cool. We want to wish you all happy Independence Day on the 4th of July, and we hope you have a fun and safe holiday. WGXC 90.7 FM.
Thank you. Thank you, WGXC listeners. Enjoy happy 4th of July memories. And it's you. I am Matthew Wynn Harrington, Kelly Amicon, Sean McDonald, and Michael Patrick Hoy. Thank you, W90.7, WGXC Open Ears. Live by life. Thank you. Happy holiday.
Our amber waves of grain. Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Clearly lays out areas where his involvement with the executive branch can be used and cannot be reviewed criminally. Can't even question his motive. And that's deeply troubling.
David Becker with the Center for Election, Innovation, and Research says the conservative majority on the Supreme Court has given former President Donald Trump a major win, but dealt a massive blow to democracy. The court says a president may claim criminal immunity for official acts, including some like those around January 6th. The decision's timing also may fatally delay the federal charges that Trump tried to overturn 2020. And Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson is one of the three liberal justices warning the decision will allow presidential power to be used for evil ends.
But once we say, no criminal liability, Mr. President, you can do whatever you want, I'm worried that we would have a worse problem than the problem of the president feeling constrained to follow the law while he's in office.
New data shows that nearly three quarters of voters say future Supreme Court picks are a crucial issue in the presidential race. Sarah Harris is with Stand Up America.
It's important to think about generations after us because many of the people who could potentially be put on the bench will be on there for 50 to 60 years, potentially, as justices continue to be appointed younger and younger.
Following last week's lackluster presidential debate, President Joe Biden's campaign aims to call members of the Democratic Party. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear is one of several being discussed as a possible replacement. But like the others, he says he's sticking with Biden.
Only the president can determine his future as a candidate. He is the candidate, and as long as he is, I'm supporting him.
So far, polls seem to show little or no impact from the debate, and new data suggests more than 7 in 10 voters have already decided. A presidential historian, Douglas Brinkley, compares Biden's position to that of President Lyndon B. Johnson, who pulled out of his race in 68. Brinkley tells CBS that Biden needs to speak to those beyond his family and loyal supporters.
Bill Clinton and Barack Obama may be the deciders if they can team up. They are probably the only ones that can break through the Jill Biden and his White House team and maybe say to Biden, you got to step down. Let's turn it over to Kamala.
Finally, former Trump advisor Stephen Bannon spoke to a crowd before starting a four-month prison sentence for defying a congressional subpoena over January 6th. Bannon and Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene were heckled when he called himself a political prisoner.
This is what it takes to stand up to Joe Biden. I'm proud to do it.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The North Carolina Senate endorsed a ballot measure June 25th prohibiting non-citizens from voting, for which there is already existing law. And the Senate declined another measure repealing a racist Jim Crow-era literacy test to vote, still enshrined in the state's constitution. There is no evidence that more than a handful of non-citizens have voted in any federal or state elections nationally. Yet non-citizen voting has been among the loudest accusations in this election cycle. All 50 states already prohibit non-citizens from voting in state elections, and a 1996 federal law prohibits it in federal elections. Ballotpedia reports that 16 municipalities and the District of Columbia do allow non-citizen voting, but in municipal elections only. North Carolina would become the fifth state this year to put a measure on the November ballot. The state Senate also rejected a measure proposing repeal of a Jim Crow-era literacy test for voting enshrined in the state constitution since 1899, even after the 1965 Voting Rights Act banned such discrimination in voting. In a 109-0 vote, the state House approved sending the ballot measure to voters to repeal it, but WRAL reports that the Senate voted the measure down, with one senator suggesting that the bill was too last minute. Read the measures and local reporting linked from AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Veal.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, July 2nd. Local early morning temperatures range from 47 degrees in Steventown to 54 in Skodak. Air quality will be good and the weather is going to be great. A cool morning gives way to a warm afternoon. High of 82 lingers for a couple hours, but it shouldn't be a bother as dew points will be in the 50s. Some puffy little clouds show up in the afternoon. After dark, temperatures gently fall, reaching 59 degrees by sunup on Wednesday. A little cloudier, a little windier, tomorrow will have a high of 83 at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 65 degrees. Then, Independence Day is looking to have a threat of rain in the afternoon, a high of 86. Might be a good idea to plan some shelter for any social gatherings. 66 degrees overnight takes us into a similar Friday, potentially stormy afternoon with a high of 88. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12:15 a.m., low tide at 7:14 a.m., high tide again at 12:44 p.m., then low tide once again at 7:12 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 65 degrees and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:21 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:21 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be average at 412 kilometers per second, with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 5 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 192. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Next, we are going to hear Two Hamlets, the track from the 2023 album Reflect and Oppose from Sky Furrows. That's Columbia County-based poet Karen Schomer and Albany-based musicians Eric Hardiman, Mike Griffin, and Phil Donnelly. Here is Two Hamlets from the 2023 album Reflect and Oppose from Sky Furrows.
Unicorn pants jammed on racks, plastic abject waste, as in fell down a well, won't be rescued or revived, sheer an idea, remove an outgrowth, shove aside. A shiv, a jagged piece, an uneven blade to do it, open fissures and discourse, what I think has cracks in it. Trim it, give it a lather, a steam towel.
Big smile, gosh, looks great, I'm glowing. Shave a few pounds, rave about a new show on Netflix. Project a disembodied speaker, brush dirt off my sweater. Dialogue, exposition, imperative persona. Wipe it out, erase it, deploy predictable patterns. Toward the mountains, slightly firm and sweet, drawn on paper, drawn from memory, drawn forth on a string pulled by a reckless actor, expository portion of a story, a montage, hats, gloves, anonymous coats, the streets empty of color, marzipan architecture overlooking Delft, the snow turns blue, already grieving for the self I was 5 minutes ago. Decorated wrong, stone-tongued, horned evil, just pick a way to go. In distress, I'm a mess, untogether, lacking finesse. I miss you, there I said it, but under my breath. Unsent texts, vats of words, add more to unsaid.
Two hands hold. Two perfect Hamlets being.